continued to lose mass and muscle, and to feel lethargic and weak. He knew 'twas why his grip had slipped today. Of late, when she spread the table with her rich and savory foods, his stomach roiled angrily, and on previous evenings he'd left the castle and walked outdoors to avoid temptation. But recently, indeed only this morning, he'd thought long and hard about his king's remark concerning sustenance, and had scrutinized the precise words of his command. "You must eat, but I would suggest you seek only bland foods." "I would suggest..." It was the most nebulous phrase his liege had ever uttered. "I would suggest..." That was not at all how his king spoke to vengeance. It made one think the king might be uncertain of himself, unwilling, for some unfathomable reason, to commit to a command. And bland. How vague was bland? An engraved invitation to interpretation, that word was. After much meditation, Vengeance concluded for himself, a thing coming shockingly easier each day, that apparently his king had suffered some uncertainty as to how hard Vengeance might be laboring, so he'd been unable to anticipate what sustenance his body would require. Thus he had suggested, leaving the matter to Vengeance's discretion. As his king had placed such a trust in him, Vengeance resolved he must not return to his king weakened in body and risk inciting his displeasure. When he rose and joined her at the table, her eyes rounded in disbelief.
"I will dine with you this eve," he informed her, gazing at her, nay, lapping her up with his eyes.
The tantalizing scent of roasted suckling pig teased his nostrils. The glorious rainbow hues of fiery-haired Jane clad in an emerald gown teased something he couldn't name.
"No bread?"
she managed after an incredulous pause.
"'Tis not enough to sustain me through the day's labors."
"I see,"
she said carefully, as she hastened to lay another setting. Vengeance eyed the food with great interest. She served him generous portions of roast pork swimming in juices and glazed with a jellied sauce, roasted potatoes in clotted cream with chive, some type of vegetable mix in yet another sauce, and thin strips of battered salmon. As a finishing touch, she added several ladles of a buttery-looking pudding. When she placed it before him, he continued to eye it, knowing he'd not yet gone too far. He could still rise and return to his corner, to his bread.
"I would suggest..."
He glanced at her. She had a spoon in her mouth and was licking the clotted cream from it. That was all it took. He fell upon the food like a ravening beast, eating with his bare hands, shoving juicy, deliciously greasy pork into his mouth, stripping the tender meat from the bones with his teeth and tongue. Christ, it was heavenly, rich and succulent and warm. Jane watched, astonished. It took him less than 3 minutes to devour every morsel she'd placed on his plate. His aquamarine eyes were wild, his sensual mouth glistening with juices from the roast. His hands... Oh, God, he started licking his fingers, his firm pink lips sucking, and her temperature rose 10 degrees. Elation filled her. Although he'd never admitted that he'd been ordered to eat only bread, she'd figured it out herself. Each night, while she'd dined, he'd shot furtive glances her way, watching her eat, eyeing the food with blatant longing, and a time or two she'd heard his stomach rumble.
"More!"
He shoved his platter at her. Happily she complied, and a third time, until he sat back, sighing. His eyes were different, she mused, watching him. There was something new in them, a welcome defiance. She decided to test it.
"I don't think you should eat anything but old bread in the future,"
she provoked.
"I will eat what I deem fit. And 'tis no longer bread."
Her lips ached from the effort of suppressing a delighted smile.
"I don't think that's wise,"
she pushed.
"I will eat what I wish," he snapped.
"Oh, Aiden,"
Jane thought lovingly, fighting a mist of joyous tears.
"Well done."
One tiny crack in the facade,
and she had no doubt that a man of Aiden's strength and independence would begin cracking at an alarming rate now that it had begun.
"If you insist,"
she said mildly.
"I do," he growled. "And pass me that wine, and fetch another flagon. I feel a deep thirst coming on."
Centuries of thirst, for far more than wine. Aiden couldn't get over the pleasure of eating. Sun-warmed tomatoes, sweet young corn drenched with freshly churned butter, roasts basted with garlic, baked apples in delicate pastries smothered with cinnamon and honey. There were so many new, intriguing sensations. The fragrance of heather on the autumn breeze, the salty, rhythmic lick of the ocean when he swam in it to bathe each eve, the brush of soft linen against his skin. Once, when no one had been in the castle, he'd removed his clothing and stretched naked on the velvet coverlet, pressed his body into the soft ticks, pondered lying there with her. But then he'd caught a rash from the coverlet that had made the part of him between his legs swell up. He'd swiftly dressed again and not repeated that indulgence. Unfortunately, the rash lingered, manifesting itself at odd intervals. There were unpleasant sensations, too. Sleeping on the hard, cold floor, whilst she curled cozily in the overstuffed bed with the beastie. The tension of watching the lass's ankles and calves as she sauntered about. The sickness he felt in his stomach when he gazed upon the soft rise of her breasts in her gown. He'd seen much more than that. Yestreen, when the audacious wench had tugged a heavy tub before the fire and proceeded to fill it with pails of steaming water and sprinkle it with herbs. He'd not comprehended what she was doing until she'd been as naked and rosy-bottomed as when she'd arrived at the castle a fortnight past, and then he'd been too stunned to move. Feeling strangely nauseous, he'd finally gathered his wits and fled the hall, chased by the lass's soft, derisive snort. He'd warred with himself on the newly laid terrace, only to return a quarter hour hence and watch her from the shadows of the doorway where she couldn't see him. Swallowing hard, endeavoring to slow his breathing, to stop the thundering of his blood in his veins, he'd watched her soap and rinse every inch of her body. When his hands were trembling and his body aching in odd places, he'd closed his eyes, but the images had been burned into his brain. 13 more days, he told himself. Less than a fortnight remained until he could return to his king. But with each day that passed, his curiosity about her grew. What did she ponder when she sat before the hearth staring into the flames? Why had she no man when the other village women did? Why did she watch him with that expression on her face? Why did she labor so over her letters? Why did she want him to touch her? What would come of it were he to comply? And the most pressing question of late, as his thoughts turned less often to his king and more often to that puzzling pain between his legs, or the hollow ache behind his breastbone. How long would he be able to resist finding out? 9.
What are you writing?
Aiden asked casually, his tone implying that he cared not what she replied, or even if she did. Although her heart leapt, Jane pretended to ignore him. They sat in chairs at catty-corner angles near the hearth in the great hall. She curled near a table and three bright oil globes, he practically inside the hearth atop the blaze. He'd been surreptitiously watching her across the space of half a dozen feet for over an hour, and his question was the first direct one he'd asked of her since her arrival at Dun Acun that didn't concern castle matters. Concealing a smile, she continued writing as if she hadn't heard him.
He rose from the chair so abruptly that it toppled over, crashing to the floor. His aquamarine eyes glittering with desire, he ripped the sheaf of papers from her hands and threw them aside. He towered over her, his intense gaze seeming to delve into her very soul.
Forget these papers. Forget my question. I want you, Jane.
He said roughly.
I need you. Now.
He began to strip, unlacing his linen shirt, tugging it over his head. He pressed a finger to her lips when she began to speak.
Hush, lass. Do not deny me. 'Tis no use. I will have you this night. You are mine and only mine for all of ever. Then yet another day.
Why another day? she whispered against his finger, her heart hammering with nervousness and anticipation. She'd never been with a man before, only dreamed of it. And the dark Highlander standing before her was every inch a dream come to life. He flashed her a seductive grin as he unknotted his plaid and let it slip down over his taut buttocks. No, strike that. Over his lean, muscular hips. Bracing his hands on the arms of her chair, he lowered his head toward hers.
"Because not even forever with you will be enough to satisfy me, sweet Jane. I'm a greedy, demanding man." "I said, what are you writing?"
His voice was tight.
His hard body glistened bronze in the shimmering light of dozens of oil globes.
"I can't resist you, lass. God knows I've tried."
He groaned, his voice low and taut with need.
"I think about you day and night. I can't sleep for wanting you. 'Tis a madness I fear will never abate."
Jane swallowed a dreamy sigh and paused, quill poised above the paper. She arched a brow at him, outwardly calm while inwardly melting. His eyes flashing in his dark face, he coiled tensely in his chair, as if he might leap up at any moment and pounce. Oh, if only.
"Why do you care?"
she said with a shrug, trying to sound nonchalant. She was sick of being patient. She knew that the presence of the villagers, the laboring with his hands on what had once been his home, and his nocturnal spying upon her in the bath were beginning to take a toll. She'd been wise to take a passive role for the past 2 weeks, but it was time to be more proactive. She had 12 days, and she was not going to lose him.
"You do nothing without purpose," he said stiffly. "I merely wish to know your purpose in practicing your letters so faithfully, Achieve."
Jane pressed her quill to parchment again.
He tugged her up from the chair, crushing her body against the hard length of his own. Gazing into her eyes, he deliberately rocked his hips forward so she could feel his huge cock. So she could feel his need. Hard and hot, his impressive erection. Hard and hot, he throbbed, pressing through the thin silk of her gown.
Jane blew out a breath of pure sexual frustration. Writing love scenes sure could be sheer torture for a girl with no man of her own, and placed the quill aside. Sexpot promptly jumped onto the small side table and attacked the feather, shaking it violently. Rescuing the quill before the kitten shredded yet another one, she hesitated before answering. She knew that one inadvertent misstep might drive him back into his rigid shell. He'd made it clear he would never permit her to touch him. She had to find a way to coax him to touch her.
"I'm not practicing my letters. I write stories."
"What kind of stories?"
Jane stared at him hungrily. He was so damned sexy sitting there. Only yesterday he'd taken to wearing a plaid for the first time since his arrival, saying it was cooler to work in. There he sat, looking just like her, Aiden, clad in crimson and black and no shirt. His upper body glistened with a faint sheen of sweat as he perched as close to the fire as he could get.
"You wouldn't understand any of it,"
she said coolly.
"Understand what?"
he said angrily.
"I understand many things."
"You wouldn't understand what I write about,"
she goaded.
"I write about human things. Things you couldn't possibly understand. Remember, you're not human,"
she pressed.
"By the way,"
she added sweetly,
"have you figured out yet what you actually are?"
There, she thought smugly. He looked incensed. Her Aiden was a proud man and didn't like to be belittled. Over the past week, he'd begun to display resentment toward anything resembling a direct order, which pleased her and made her suspect that he would defy her outright were she to issue a firm command. Anger and confusion warred behind his eyes.
"I have been laboring with other humans. You do not know what I can and can't understand."
"Never read my stories,"
she said sternly.
"They are private. It's none of your business, Aiden."
"So long as I am laird of this castle, everything is my—"
He broke off with a stricken expression.
"Laird of this castle,"
she echoed,
searching his gaze. He hadn't even bothered to chastise her for calling him Aiden. He stared into her eyes a long moment, then said stiffly,
"I meant that the villagers think I am. So if you're to live here in what they think is my castle, you should abide by that perception, too. Or find another place to live, lass. That's all I meant."
He snapped, then pushed himself angrily up from his chair. But at the doorway he cast a glance over his shoulder so full of frustrated longing, so rife with desire, that it sent a shiver up her spine. It was plain to see that he was beginning to feel all the things he'd once felt, but couldn't understand them. Much later, Jane scooped up her papers in one arm and sexpot in the other. She knew exactly which scene of the manuscript she was working on to inadvertently leave lying about tomorrow.
10. The first time he kissed her slowly, brushing his lips lightly back and forth, creating a delicious, sensual friction until hers parted, yielding utterly. The second, deeper, even more intimately, and the third so possessively that it made her dizzy. His silky tongue tangled with hers. He fitted his mouth so completely over hers that she could scarcely breathe. If a kiss could speak, his was purring, "You are mine forever." Subsequent kisses blended, wet and hot and intoxicating, one into another until her head was reeling. She trembled, burning with the scorching heat of desire. She whimpered when he traced the curve of her jaw, down her neck to the top of her breast. His touch evoked a blend of lassitude and adrenaline that made her feel strong and weak at the same time. Soft and supple, yet close to aggression. Hot and needy and achy. His aquamarine eyes promised lovemaking that would strip bare far more than her body. Gently slipping the sleeves of her gown from her shoulders, he bared her breasts to his hungry gaze. The chill air coupled with the molten promise in his eyes made her breasts feel tight and achy. When he lowered his dark head and captured a nipple in his mouth, she whimpered with pleasure. When he buried his face between her breasts, slipping her gown down over her hips, she pressed her honeyed womanhood. She pressed against him, clinging. His lips seared her sensitive skin. He scattered light kisses across her tummy, nipping and nibbling, then dropping to his knees before her. She could barely stand, her knees so weak with desire, and when his hot tongue pressed to her hotter flesh, lapping sweetly at her passion juices, at her most private heat, she nearly screamed with the exquisiteness of it.
Jane stood in the doorway of the great hall, a smile curving her lips, watching Aiden. 15 minutes ago, she'd informed him that she was going to take a quick nap before beginning preparations for their evening meal. She'd headed for the bedchamber, conveniently leaving a few pages of her manuscript lying beside the hearth, as if forgotten. He'd nodded nonchalantly, but his gaze had betrayed him by drifting to the parchment. Shortly after retiring to the bedchamber, she'd crept back to the hall. He was standing by the fire, reading so intently that he didn't even notice her standing in the shadows of the stone doorway, watching as his eyes narrowed and his grip tightened on the parchment. After a few minutes, he wet his lips and wiped beads of sweat from his forehead with the back of his hand.
"I feel quite rested now,"
she announced, striding briskly into the hall.
"Hey!"
she exclaimed, feigning outrage that he was snooping.
"Those are my papers. I told you not to read them."
His head shot up. His eyes were dark, his pupils dilated, his chest rising and falling as if he'd run a marathon. He shook the parchments at her.
"What are these scribblings?"
Vengeance demanded in a voice that should have been firm, but came out sounding hoarse. His chest felt tight, that heavy part of him betwixt his legs. Oh, Christ, it hurt! Instinctively, he palmed it through the fabric of his kilt to soothe it, hoping the pain would diminish, but touching it only seemed to make it worse. Appalled, he removed his hand and glared at her. She seemed to find the gesture quite fascinating. Jane cornered him and tried to grab the papers from his hand, but he held them above his head.
"Just give them back," she snapped.
"I do not think so," he growled. He stood there looking at her. Her jaw, her neck, her breasts.
"This man you write of," he said tensely. "He has dark hair and eyes of my hue."
"So?"
she said, doing her best to sound defensive.
"'Tis me you write about,"
he accused. When she made no move to deny it, he scowled.
"'Tis in no fashion a proper woman might write—"
He broke off, wondering what he knew of proper women when he knew naught of female humans but what he'd learned from her. He studied her, trying to think, which was immensely difficult with parts of his body behaving so strangely. His breath was too short and shallow, his mouth parched, his heart pounding. He felt intensely alive, all his senses stirring, demanding, starving for touch.
"This pressing of the lips of yours makes one feel as if one is—"
he glanced back at the papers.
"Burning with the scorching heat of desire."
He, who'd long been cold, ached to feel such heat.
"Yes, if a man's any good at it," she said archly. "But you're not a man, remember. It probably wouldn't work for you,"
she added sweetly.
"You do not know that," he snapped.
"Trust me,"
she provoked.
"I doubt you have the right stuff."
"I do not know what this right stuff of yours is, but I know that I am formed like a man,"
he said indignantly.
"I look as all the villagers do."
He thought hard for a moment.
"Verily, I believe I am more well-formed than the lot of them,"
he added defensively.
"My leg's more powerful,"
he said, moving his plaid to display a thigh for her.
"See, and my shoulders are wider. I am greater of height and girth, with no excess fatty parts."
He preened for her, and it was everything she could do not to drool. More well-formed. Sheesh, the man could drive the sails of Playgirl right through the roof.
"Whatever,"
Jane said, purloining one of her teenage niece Jessica's most irritating responses, guaranteed to provoke, issued in tones that implied nothing he could say or do might interest her.
"You would do well not to dismiss me so lightly,"
he growled. They stared at each other for a long, tense moment. Then he glanced back at the parchment.
"Regardless of whether I'm human or no, 'tis plain from your writings that you wish me to do such things to you."
His tone challenged her to deny it. Jane swallowed hard. Should she pretend to order him not to? Should she concede? She was on tricky terrain, uncertain what would push his buttons just a teeny bit further. He was so close to falling on her like a ravening beast, and God, how she wanted him to. As fate would have it, her very indecision provoked him correctly. As she hesitated, nibbling on her lower lip, a thing she did often while thinking hard, his gaze fixed there, his eyes narrowed.
"You do wish me to," he accused, "else you would have denied it outright."
She nodded.
"Why?"
he asked hoarsely.
"It will make me happy,"
she managed lamely, twirling a strand of hair around her finger. He nodded, as if that were a fine excuse. After a moment's hesitation, he croaked,
"You wish this now? At this very moment? Here?"
He fisted his hands, half crumpling the parchment. His blasted voice had risen and dropped again like a green lad's. He felt incomparably foolish, yet also as if he faced a moment of ineluctable destiny. Jane's throat constricted with longing as she gazed at him. She wanted him every bit as much as she needed to breathe and eat. He was necessary to the care and feeding of her soul. She nodded, not trusting herself to speak. Vengeance stood motionless, his mind racing. His king had ordered that he not permit a human female to touch him. But he'd said nothing about vengeance touching a human female. There was this thing inside him, this great gnawing curiosity. He wondered if there was such a thing as burning with the scorching heat of desire, and if so, just how it might feel.
"If I do this, you may not touch me," he warned.
"I can't touch you," she echoed. "That's so ridiculous. Don't you wonder why your king made up that idiotic rule?"
"You will do as I demand. I will do this thing as you have written, only if you vow not to touch me."
"Fine,"
she snapped, anything to get his hands on her. She'd cheerfully acquiesce to being tied to the bed if she must.
Intriguing thought, that.
When he stepped forward, she tipped her head back and gazed up at him. He glanced swiftly at the parchment, as if committing it to memory.
"First, I am to brush my lips lightly across yours. You are to slightly part yours," he directed.
"I think we can play it by ear,"
she said, leaning minutely nearer, praying fervently that he wouldn't change his mind. She felt she might combust the moment he touched her, so long had she ached to feel his hands on her body. He glanced back at the parchment with a look of alarm and confusion.
"You mentioned naught of ears in your writing. Am I to do something with your ears, too?"
Jane nearly whimpered with frustration. Snatching the parchment from his hands, she said,
"It's a figure of speech, Aiden. It means we'll figure it out as we go along. Just begin. You'll do fine, I promise."
"I'm merely trying to ascertain we both know our proper positions,"
he said stiffly. The hell with proper, Jane thought, moistening her lips with her tongue and gazing up at him longingly. The last thing she wanted from him was proper.
"Touch me," she encouraged.
Warily, he leaned closer. Jane swayed forward, drawn like a magnet to steel. She wouldn't be satisfied until she was clinging to him like saran wrap. Although she was forbidden to out and out touch him, once he touched her, she certainly could press against him. But still, he didn't move.
"Would you please just start already?"
"I am not quite certain I know what your most private heat is,"
he admitted reluctantly. What was happening to him, he wondered. Complying with his demand, she was not touching him, but the tips of her breasts nearly brushed his chest. He could feel the heat of her body, and an alarming urgency flooding his.
"I'll help you find it,"
she assured him fervently.
"You're, too short,"
he hedged. It took Jane 2 seconds to retrieve the small footstool from beside the hearth, plop it down at his feet, and stand on it. It put them nose to nose, a mere inch apart. She stared at him, heart thundering, and he stared silently back. Their breath mingled. His gaze dropped from her eyes to her lips, back to her eyes, then lips again. He wet his lips, staring at her. Jane kept her hands behind her back so she wouldn't touch him, knowing he'd use it as an excuse to leave. It was intensely intimate, such closeness without actually touching. And the way he was looking at her, with such raw hunger and heat. A small sound escaped her. He answered in kind, then looked startled by his involuntary groan. Jane scarcely dared breathe, waiting for him to move that last tiny half inch. His dark, raw sexuality coupled with his innocence of lovemaking was an irresistibly erotic combination. The man was an expert lover, of that she had no doubt. Yet it was as if it were his first time ever, and each touch would be an undiscovered country to him. She gave a quarter inch, and he met her halfway. His lips touched hers.
"God, they were cold,"
she thought, stunned. "Icy."
"God, she was warm,"
he thought, stunned. "Blazing." Fascinated, vengeance pressed his mouth more snugly to hers. He knew he was supposed to use his tongue somehow, but wasn't certain he understood the mechanics of it.
"Taste me,"
she breathed against his lips.
Taste me like you would lick juice from your lips.
Ah, he thought, understanding. Mesmerized by the softness of her lips, he touched the tip of his tongue to them, running it over the seam, and when her lips parted, he tasted her like he was trying to remove a bit of cream from the center of a pastry. She was infinitely sweeter. And then his body seemed to take over, to understand something he didn't, and with a hoarse groan he plunged his tongue into her mouth and crushed her against him, locking his arms securely behind her back. But that wasn't good enough, he quickly decided. He needed her head just so, so he slipped his hands deep into her hair and clamped her face firmly, kissing her until they were both breathless. It was incredible, he marveled, stopping to stare at her. He touched a finger to his own lips. They were warm. And she got prettier when he kissed her, he thought, awestruck. Her lips got all swollen and cushy-looking. Her eyes sparkled like jewels, and her skin grew rosy. He'd done that to her, he thought, with pride. He could make a lass prettier merely by pressing his lips to hers. 'Twas a gift his king had ne'er told him he possessed. He wondered how much prettier she'd get if he touched his lips to her in other places. You are lovely, lass, he said in a voice utterly unlike his own normal tone. Indeed, it came out raspy and thick. Nay, dunna speak. I haven't finished. He pressed his lips to hers again, swallowing her words. With butterfly-light touches, his thumbs caressed smooth circles on the delicate skin of her neck, along the line of her jaw and over her face. Then he drew back and ran his fingers lightly over her face, as if he were blind, absorbing the feel of every plane and angle from the downy soft brows to the pert nose and high bones of her cheeks, from the shape of her widow's peak to the point of her chin, her soft, lush lips. When he rested a finger there too long, she gently sucked the tip of it, and heat lanced straight down to his groin. The vision of her lips closed full and sweetly around his finger near made him crazed, reminded him of something else, long forgotten, something a lass might do that was sweeter than heaven. His breath caught in his throat. She stared at him, her amber eyes glowing, wide, trusting, her lips around his finger. It made him nearly mad with some kind of pain in his breast. Taking her face between his hands, he kissed her as if he could suck the heat of her right into his body, and indeed it seemed he did. I want to touch you till your skin smells of me, he growled, not knowing why. Every inch of it. But Jane understood. It was a purely male way of marking his territory, loving his woman until she bore his unique scent from head to toe. She whimpered assent into his mouth, her hands curled into fists behind her back, because it was killing her to not touch him. Then he lifted her from the stool, crushing her against him completely, holding her weight as if she were light as a feather, and his hard, hot arousal pressed into the V of her thighs. I'm dying, Vengeance realized dimly. The feel of her body against that swollen part of him that seemed to have never recovered from whatever rash he'd caught from the coverlet burned and throbbed angrily. He must be dying, because no man could withstand such pain for long. Mayhap, he thought, once he'd undressed her as she'd directed in her parchments, he could doff his tartan too, and she might tell him what was wrong with him. But nay, he would press his lips to hers a few more times, for she might see the thing betwixt his legs and be disgusted. Flee him. For now he was warm. So warm. He slipped his hands from her hair and down over her breasts. He shuddered. Once, twice, and three times before losing complete control of himself. He had no idea what he'd done, lost to a madness of sorts, until he stood looking at her as she perched atop the small stool, naked, tatters of her dress scattered across the floor. He had no clear memory of ripping her gown away, so urgent and fierce had his need been to bear her completely to his touch. "Did I hurt you?" he demanded. Jane shook her head, her eyes wide.
Touch me,
she encouraged softly.
Find my most private heat. You may look for it wherever you wish,
she encouraged, eyes sparkling. He circled her slowly. She didn't move a muscle, merely stood naked on the stool as he marveled over every inch of her. And when he returned to face her, he sucked in a breath. She'd done it again, grown more beautiful. Her eyes were filled with some lazy, dreamy knowing he could only guess at, glittering and sleepy and desirous. Her skin flushed from head to toe. He reached out with both hands and gathered the firm, plump weight of her breasts in his palms. They felt sweet, so sweet. Their eyes met, and she made a soft mewing sound that shivered through him.
Kiss.
Aye, he said instantly, knowing what she wanted, and lowered his head to the soft pillows of her breasts. Unable to comprehend why he wanted it so badly, he closed his lips over first one nipple, then the next. Unknowing why he did it, his hand slipped between her soft thighs, sought the warmth and wetness. And images assaulted him. He was someone else, a man who knew much of soft thighs and heated loving. A man who lost everything, everyone.
Aiden, please didn't go,
the child sobbed.
At least wait till Ma and Da come home.
I must go now, little one. The man crushed her in his arms, brushing helplessly at her tears. 'Tis only for 5 years. Why, you'll be but a lass of 10 and 3 when I return. The man closed his eyes. I left a note for Ma and Da.
Nay, Aiden, dinna leave me,
the child said, weeping as if her heart would break.
I love you.
Ah! Vengeance roared, thrusting her away, clutching his head with both hands. He bellowed wordlessly, backing away until his spine hit the wall.
Aiden, what is it?
Jane cried, jumping off the stool and scurrying toward him.
Dunna call me that!
He shouted, his palms clamped to his temples.
But Aiden...
Hold your waist, woman!
But I think you're remembering,
she said frantically, trying to touch him, to soothe him. Another wordless bellow was his only reply, as he raced from the hall as if all the hounds of hell were nipping at his heels. 11. Above all else, it would be unwise to seek the company of female humans or permit them to touch you. It would be unwise. How had he overlooked such non-specific phrasing? It would be unwise. Vengeance didn't feel particularly wise at the moment. Nor did he intend to eat bland food. Nor did he intend to circumvent Kylakan because it might be best. Just as he'd begun to suspect, his king had in truth not issued a single order at all.
How and when did I meet him?
Vengeance wondered for the first time. Had he been born in Faerie, pledged to the king from birth? Had he met him in later years? Why couldn't he remember? Vengeance sat in silence beside the gently lapping ocean, slapping the blade of a dirk against his palm. Fairies didn't bleed. They healed too quickly. Vengeance made a fist around the blade. Blood seeped from his clenched hand and dripped down the sides. He spread his fingers and studied the deep cuts. They remained deep, oozing dark crimson blood. A harsh, relieved breath escaped him.
How old was he? How long had he lived?
Why could he not recall ever changing? Why did humans gray on their heads, yet Vengeance remained unchanged?
Nothing changes in Faerie.
If he never went back, would his long black hair one day silver, too? Strangely, the thought appealed to him. Thoughts of a child rose unbidden in his mind. He imagined hugging one of the wee village lasses in his arms, wiping away her tears, teaching her to climb trees, to make boats out of wood and sail them in the surf, bringing her a litter of mewing kittens whose mother had died birthing them.
"Who am I?"
Vengeance cried, clutching his head. It occurred to him that, in truth, mayhap the right question was, who had he once been? Jane watched him from the front steps of the castle. He sat with his back to her in the deepening twilight, clutching his head, staring out to sea. Blood was smeared on one of his hands, dripping down his arm. Suddenly he stood up, and she caught a gleam of silver as he flung a blade end over end into the waves. A salty breeze whipped at his hair, tangling the dark strands into a silken skein. His plaid flapped in the breeze, hugging the powerful lines of his body. He seemed dark and desolate and strong and utterly untouchable. Jane's eyes misted.
"I love you, Aiden McKinnon," she told the wind.
As if the wind eagerly whisked her words down the front lawn to the sea's edge, Aiden suddenly turned and looked straight at her. His cheeks gleamed wetly in the fading light. He nodded once, then turned his back to her and walked off down the shore, head bowed. Jane started after him, then stopped. There'd been such desolation in his gaze, such loneliness, yet a great deal of anger. He'd turned away, clearly demonstrating his wish to be alone. She didn't want to push him too hard. She couldn't even begin to understand what he was going through. She was elated that he was remembering, and equally anguished by the pain it was causing him. She watched, torn by indecision, until he disappeared around a bend in the rocky shoreline. 12. He didn't come back for 3 days. They were the most agonizing 3 days of Jane Silly's life. Daily she cursed herself for pushing him too far, too fast. Daily she berated herself for not going after him when he'd begun walking down that rocky shore. Daily she lied to the villagers when they came to work, assuring them he'd only gone to see a man about a horse and would return anon. And nightly, as she curled with Sexpot in the bed that was much too large for just one lonely girl, she prayed her words would prove true. 13. It was the middle of the night when Aiden returned. He awakened her abruptly, stripping the coverlets from her naked body, sending Sexpot flying from the bed with a disgruntled meow.
"Aiden!"
Jane gasped, staring up at him. His expression was so fierce that her sleep-fogged brain cleared instantly. He stood at the foot of the bed, his dark gaze sweeping every inch of her nude body. He braided his hair. His face was dark with the stubble of a black beard, shadowing his jaw. In the past few weeks he'd lost weight, and although he was still powerfully muscular, there was a leanness to him, a dangerously hungry look, like a wolf too long alone and unfed in the wild. He didn't say a word, just stripped off his shirt and kicked off his boots, then moved toward her. She never would have believed it of herself, but he radiated such barely harnessed fury that she scuttled back against the headboard and crossed her arms over her breasts protectively.
"Ach, nay, lass," he said with silky menace. "Not after all the times you've tried to get me to touch you. You will na naysay me now."
Jane's eyes grew huge.
I...
"Touch me."
He unknotted his plaid and let it fall to the floor. Jane's jaw dropped.
I...
She tried again, and failed again.
"Is something wrong with me?"
he demanded.
No,
she managed.
No way.
She swallowed hard.
"And this?"
He palmed his formidable erection.
"This is as it should be."
"Oh,"
Jane breathed reverently.
"Absolutely."
He eyed her suspiciously.
"You're not just saying that, are you?"
Jane shook her head, her eyes wide.
"Then give me those kisses of yours, lass, and be quick about it."
He paused a moment, then added in a low, tense voice,
"I'm cold, lass. I'm so cold."
Jane's breath hitched in her throat and her eyes misted. His vulnerability melted her fears. She rose to her knees on the bed and extended her hands to him. Never breaking eye contact, staring into her eyes as if the invitation in them was all that was sustaining him, he placed his hands slowly in hers and let her pull him onto the bed, where he knelt facing her. She glanced down at their entwined hands, and his gaze followed. Her hands were small and white, nearly swallowed by his work-roughened and tan fingers. She flexed her fingers against his, savoring the first real feel of holding Aiden's hand. Until that moment, she'd only touched him in her dreams. She closed her eyes, savoring every bit of it, drinking the experience dry. She opened them to find him regarding her with expectancy and fascination.
"Sometimes I think I know you, lass."
"You do?"
she said with a little catch in her voice.
"I'm Jane."
"You're Jane," she longed to cry. He hesitated a long moment. Then,
"I'm Aiden. Aiden McKinnon."
Jane stared at him wonderingly.
"You've remembered?"
she exclaimed.
"Oh, Aiden."
He cut her words off with a gentle finger against her lips.
"Does it matter? The villagers think I am. You think I am. Why should I not be?"
Jane's heart sank again. He still didn't recall. But he was here, and he was willing to let her touch him. She would take what she could.